We present My Music. A musical panel game devised by Edward J. Mason and Tony Schreiber. And here to introduce the teams is Steve Race.
Hello again. I can no longer hide from you the fact that once more the cast of My Music is unchanged. That means John Amis with Frank Muir and Ian Wallace with Dennis Norden. John, the first question goes to you. What does this music come from, and what did its composer call the work? It's not an opera, but a what? From not an opera.
Well, it's The Damnation of Faust.
Yes, by...
by Hector Berlioz.
Yes.
What did he call it? An oratorio or a staged oratorio?
No, you're getting a dramatic... something
cantata.
Or other. No, a dramatic legend, he called it, in four parts and epilogue. But you must have the mark, of course, because you identified the piece. Mm. So it was The Damnation of Faust, dedicated to Liszt.
You know, there was a performance of this some time ago by the Chelsea Opera Group, an amateur body. It was conducted by Colin Davis, and a mate of his and a mate of mine called David Cairns, a critic, was playing the cymbals. And you have to be very careful with cymbals, because if you press them too hard, absolutely together, they implode. And they go the wrong way round. And that's what happened to poor old David Cairns. He went... and he went... yes. It's very rare and very difficult to do, but he managed it.
Yes. Frank. Frank, recover, please. What can you tell me, Frank, about this?
Virile choir performances.
Yes.
One normally expects from Wales.
This came from Wales too. The Orpheus male choir of Rhys. Rhys, I think I'm pronouncing it correctly. I hope I'm pronouncing it.
Well, I'm glad I've answered your question satisfactorily.
What can you tell me about the piece, or the words, really, specifically the words?
I didn't specifically hear any specific word.
Oh, dear. You'll be the favourite of the Welsh choirs, won't you? Out of the night that covers me, I thank my unconquerable soul and all that.
Out of the
night. Yes, but whose words? Do you know the words?
No.
Oh, really? Invictus by W.E. Henley.
Oh, yes.
That Henley. One.
I'm
friend of Stevenson, champion of Kipling and Wells.
Bloody but unbowed.
Yes.
He was crippled.
Yes, I'm the master of my... I'm the captain of my soul.
He was actually bowed, but unbloody.
Yes.
Because he was a cripple.
I don't really think you got a mark, do you?
I didn't, right? Sir, no. I'm very depressed about the whole thing.
I'll tell you what, you get a half mark for saying it was a Welsh choir, because it was a Welsh choir. Speaking of Wales, I had a letter, you'll be delighted to know, from the coroner of Swansea.
Oh.
Telling me about a judge in a copyright case who was gazing blankly at a piece of music, and he said, Mr. So-and-so, what is the difference between these hollow notes and the ones that are filled in? And he replied, My lord, I assure you the difference is minimal. I thought you'd like that.
It was a crotchety judge,
wasn't it? Yeah, crotchety judge, John says. Yes, thank you. Quavery, too.
No more.
You'll be working on semi-brief over the next 10 minutes. Yeah. No. Ian, over to you. This song is in a foreign tongue. Will you kindly translate it for us?
Sweet solace to me when weary we toil and we toil.
Roughly what?
The short answer to that is no. These are the moments when I become uncomfortably aware of the fact that I was born in London, although a Scot. I'm always come over a bit nervous when people ask me to explain a Scots lyric. Yeah. I know it talked about my ain hoose at the end, and I suspect that the voice is that of Moira Anderson.
There's a half mark,
which
anyway.
Which is a half mark, I feel, in the bank. There was something at the beginning about cheerleading. You haven't got the words down.
No, yet. I haven't. I was relying entirely on you.
Yes, well, not for the first time, Steve, I prove a broken reed, or a bracket reed, maybe.
Reed, yes. It's my own hoose.
Yes, well, I got my own hoose, which is, of course, my own house.
Oh, my own house, right.
Why don't they say my own house, then?
Because it would be a tragedy if local dialects were to die.
Oh, yes. Right, I better get in here before you're too heavy, I think. Yes. Dennis, here is a nice old-fashioned introduction to put you in the mood. And later on in the record, these words occur.
In my two-seater, what could be sweeter? I'll have St. Peter step inside and bless the bride. I'll be keeping my eye on the man in the moon. He's a dangerous guy when he starts to spoon. My kisses I'll shower a million an hour. No traffic cop will ever stop.
Will ever stop
Jane
who?
In a plane.
Yeah, that's got your mark. Question, will ever stop who? Yes, me and Jane in a plane. Was, yes. Mr. Cass, writing from Burnham-on-Sea in Somerset, recalls working in a record shop, Dennis, in 1941, when a young lady asked him for a record of a song called My Dear Mr. Shane.
Yes.
What would that be?
That was the one that was also known as Buy Me a Beer, Mr. Shane.
Yes. Yeah. My Dear Mr. Shane, please let me explain this. That's right. This next round begins with a snatch of song from a lad born in Hoboken, New Jersey.
We'll gather lilacs in the spring again.
I was actually there when that record was made in the studio, and Frank Sinatra began to sing, We'll gather lilacs, and somebody pressed the button and from the cubicle and said, Frank, it's lilacs, lilacs. And he said, oh, yeah, we'll gather lilacs in the spring again.
It was
lilacs. Anyway, as I said, born Sinatra was in Hoboken. John, what significance does Hoboken have in the more formal story of music?
Well, it's one of those chaps who made catalogues.
Yes.
Hoboken was a guy who catalogued Haydn's works.
Yes, Anthony van Hoboken, Haydn thematic catalogue.
Yes, to Haydn what Kirchhoff is to Mozart and Schmieder to Bach. And
what a good thing that hasn't taken care of the rest of this round, isn't it?
Oh, yes.
Might have done.
And Wing is to 18th century literature.
Thank you very much. Yes, thank you. Frank. Frank, come back. Who won an Oscar, Frank, for being the spirit and personification of youth? It
wasn't me.
Could have been you at that time, though.
You were was it sort of Mickey Mouse?
You were of an age. No, I'll give you a clue, and here it is.
I give my thanks to America.
She it was, who won the Oscar.
It's that sort of microphone soprano voice of Diana Durbin.
Yes, Diana Durbin, 1938, an Oscar for being the spirit and personification of youth.
Didn't you once say on one of these programs you used to fancy her?
Never.
No. No.
Gloria Jean, yes.
Yeah, no. Yes. I could never fancy
Baby Snoop,
Diana.
Yes, Gloria but never Jean. Diana Durbin.
Yeah. No, Steve.
Never mind. Ian, there are many musical textbooks, technical guides and things of that kind. According to a 1935 exposition by Farley and Riley, how are the notes produced on a B-flat trumpet?
Oh, this is You push them.
I did my best, down. Yes, that's right.
Music goes round and around, oh, 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 when he comes home to you. Well, I started it too.
famous song record by Farley and Riley, yeah.
Of course, with quadraphonic sound, it comes out here and here and here and here.
Yes, doesn't it? Yes. Dennis, tell me, as soon as you know who it is that I'm describing, born on the last day of the year 1905 in London, he went to America and appeared as an infant prodigy with the Chicago Symphony Orchestra at the age of 9. At the age of only 3, he'd already sung a duet with Sir Harry Lauder. By 1931, he was a bandleader. His first successful musical came in 1947, and it starred Phil Silvers and Nanette Fabray.
High Button Shoes.
Go on.
Was it? Yes, that was the chap who wrote so many songs for the lad from Hoboken, Jules Stein.
Jules Stein it was.
Yes. I've done a few programs with him. The first time I did a program with him, I was so full of respect for this man who'd written all the great Sinatra songs, at least I think all the great Sinatra songs. All through the program, I called him Mr. Stein instead of adopting the usual chairman thing of immediately going to Christian name terms. Yes. And we did another program, and he said, "Don't call me Mr. Stein. Call me Julie." So I said, "Well, that's over here. We tend to think of that as a girl's name." He said, "I'll call you Denise."
I'm absolutely fascinated to hear that, Dennis, because on a record program I was introducing on the radio some time ago, I had done a mistyping on my script. And I had put down Julie Stein. Mm. And just before this went out, my producer put his key down and said, "Ian, you've got a terror. You'll be in terrible trouble. His name is Jules Stein." And I would have been perfectly all right. Yeah. Said he'd have been happier.
Yes. I'm going to play some middle bits on the piano and ask you if you can tell me where they come from. John, here's... Oh, you can call it a middle bit of a sort. Anyway, this is for you, John.
Hint with a capital H. It's the Bonded Hallroom.
No, it's not.
Isn't it?
No. It's what Geoffrey Toy may have got the haunted ballroom idea from. Lavals.
Oh, Lavals of Ravel.
Too late of Ravel. Or as a London evening paper called it recently, La Valise.
Thanks for bad spelling.
I can't give you that. Can
no,
we?
You can't.
No. Frank, in your song, rather unusually, the second eight really is the middle eight. Normally what we call the middle eight is the third of four eights. This really is the middle eight. See if you can track it down. Next year, something's... Yes, it goes. In fact, I play the harmonies. That's that phrase. And then it goes...
Biding my time.
Yes, you got it. I'm biding my time.
The kind of guy.
Yeah, that's the one. Yes. Yeah, Gershwin, biding my time. Well worked out. Ian, you may not have sung this yourself, but you've certainly heard it sung. A middle bit again.
I've certainly heard that.
Yes.
Dennis? Any ideas?
No, it wasn't Dennis.
Is that Love is... Yeah.
You got it. Yes.
That's one of those you could repunctuate. Remember we did a round once and
Love is... The title is Love is Where You Find It.
You could make it Love is Where You Find It.
Good. Or Love is Where You Find It.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah.
Dennis, here's yours.
Mm.
because only once in every lifetime someone just like you appears. Is there any greater glory, any greater thrill? Never in a million years. Now, the girl who sang that I used to fancy...
what, Lynn Barry? Or
no, no, Alice Faye.
Alice Faye.
Alice Faye.
Same thing.
Oh, yeah. Old Wet Lips.
Old Wet Lips, yes. Yes.
Right. Old Wet Lips is back. Yeah.
Quick player, Dame Clara Butt.
Here is some characteristic music for John to identify. Which composer, John?
Well, if it's not George Melacrino, it's probably Anton Bruckner.
I didn't follow your reasoning, but we
were... Well, sort of gooey string.
Well, yes, a bit, but a little earlier. You're right, it was Anton Bruckner. And you got a mark for that. Frank Bruckner, as a man, was somewhat gauche. For instance, he wore baggy trousers, which were too short for his legs. And there was a special reason for this. Can you work out the reason, Frank?
Well, in thanks for one of his symphonies, the emperor had given him two presents, and you have the choice of an extremely attractive pair of socks or very powerful braces.
The idea of very powerful braces, well, it's a perfect word, isn't it?
What have you got written down?
What I've got written down, yes. You know you have the advantage over me, don't you?
You did have a very high speaking voice.
According to my deadpan authority, he wore baggy trousers which were too short for his legs because he wanted more freedom when playing the organ. And that's a very good reason. It's not altogether out of key with what John said either. Incidentally, I said he was gauche. After a performance of one of Bruckner's symphonies, he gave the conductor a tip. It was Hans Richter. You don't do that. Don't do that twice. Yeah. Yeah. Ian, Bruckner's worship of Wagner was so great that when they met, he fell on his knees.
Well, that's obviously the reason why he had baggy trousers.
Now you've got to mention it, yes. In fact, Bruckner would never sit, ever, in Wagner's presence. He felt as strongly as that. What is specifically Wagnerian, Ian, about this movement from his Seventh Symphony?
Sounds Wagnerian, doesn't it?
Did you hear the bass part there, particularly?
Wind. A lot of low brass, as you might say.
Let's have it now. The inclusion for the first time in a symphony of...
The tuba?
Not just tubas, but...
euphonium?
No. No, a special tuba's named after a special person.
A special person?
Whom he would never sit in the presence of.
Wagner.
You got it in one.
I would say I got it in three.
It was the inclusion for the first time in a symphony of Wagner tubas. I thought you weren't going to get that, but you did.
I thought I wasn't going to get it, Steve. In fact, I don't really think I have.
We'll give you half a mark and see how we get on at the end, Ian. Right. Dennis, which great 19th century composer was born in Vienna in 1825 and died there in 1899?
I don't know.
Oh, but you do.
No, I don't. Born in Vienna. Wait a minute. I was in Vienna, yeah. And they were going on about Schubert. In all the shops, you could get Schubert bars of chocolate. Yeah. And Schubert cakes.
I see. Yeah.
Oh, would it be... I see. I'm getting a heavy tip here. That might be Strauss. Then you're going to ask me which Strauss, and I'm back in trouble again.
I spent an entire round here talking about Bruckner, trying to get you to say that it was Bruckner.
Oh, I see.
And it was, in fact, Strauss. It was Johann Strauss the Second. I had a clue already for you, which goes like this.
Oh, I give no quarter to Colonel Cole Porter, and Gershwin keeps pounding on tin.
So you were right.
Do you Strauss. Remember when they, in the book we mentioned before, Ira Gershwin's Lyrics for All Occasions,
yeah.
they weren't allowed to put that in the film, those particular words, because they had to get permission from all the estates of Porter
yes.
And so on, so that in the film they've got some other lines completely.
Yes. Love and marriage are the subjects of the four final songs this week. John, when you and I were young, Maggie, written by an Englishman, settled in America in honour of his sweetheart Maggie Clark. And that was in 1866.
I wandered today to the hill, Maggie, to watch the scene below. The creek and the creaking old mill, Maggie, as we used to long ago. The green grove is gone from the hill, Maggie, where first the daisy sprung. The creaking old mill is now still, Maggie, since you and I were young. Oh, now we are aged and gray, Maggie, thank you, Steve. Our trials of life nearly done. Let us sing the songs that are gone, Maggie, when you and I were young.
Love and marriage, I said, these songs. Frank, do you think you could get the audience to join you in a chorus of You Made Me Love You in a nice low key for you? Okay.
You made me love you. I didn't want to do it. I didn't want to do it. You made me love you. And all the time you knew it, you only really knew it. You made me happy sometimes, you made me glad. But there were times when you made me feel quite sad. You made me love you. I didn't want to tell you. I didn't want to tell you. I want some love. That's true. Yes, I do. Indeed, I do. Indeed, I do. Give me what I cry for. You know you've got the band of kisses that I sigh for. You know you made me love you, Anna.
I tried to hit a sort of key compromise between you and all you and the rest.
Yes,
and the rest won. Yes. Dennis, Clifford Seiler wrote the words, and the much-loved Melville Gideon wrote the music. I'm tickled to death, I'm single.
Yeah.
Pretty tune. I'll indicate it while you indicate
Will you
the
do
words.
That? Yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
I'm tickled to death, I'm single. I'm tickled to death, I'm free. I've got my independence. I've got my front door key. I'm tickled to death, I've not got A-W-I-F-E. Marriage may bring ideal times, honeymoons may be real times, but I like a change at meal times. They can't catch me.
Sweet little song, Melville Gideon's music. Ian, your song needs no introduction from me, so I'll just play the introduction.
Very relieved to hear that. to your heart, I give you the key to mine. We'd open the door to a wonderful dream of a life and a love divine. No barrier then could keep us apart, and daydreams would all come true. For the key of your heart is the key to the door of a paradise for two.
From The Maid of the Mountains, a fine, straightforward tune and a fine, straightforward closing score to a narrow victory for Ian Wallace and Dennis Norden. Goodbye.
Taking part in My Music were John Amos, Frank Muir, Ian Wallace and Dennis Norden. The chairman was Steve Race. The questions were compiled by Steve Race, and the program was produced by Tony Schreiner.